Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's our favorite columnist and Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken. You know why we keep having you back, because you are the best of the best, and thank you for doing all of this for us.
Well, thank you. It's always good to be here.
You're fresh off the DNC. So what news from the New York State emerged? The governor gave a speech, but I don't think a lot of people heard it. What do you make of all that?
Well, I think the speech itself was a speech. I don't think it hurt him. I don't think it helped him. I think he saw it as a way to expand his national profile, but it was at 7:20 in the evening on Thursday, the night Hillary Clinton spoke. You know, the speech itself got mixed reviews. The Washington Post called him a loser for it.
He didn't mention Hillary until 13.
No, and that was quite obvious. I mean, he was going on and on about, he hit Trump a little. He was talking about the successes he's had here in New York with progressive policies and how you can get progressive policies accomplished and move through. And then finally, about 13 minutes in, he got to Hillary Clinton, and 15 minutes in, he was done. I think the big thing that a lot of people took away that you saw in the reviews of it, where there were reviews of it, was that he was no Mario when it came to speech giving. I would also argue he's no Bill Clinton when it comes to speech giving. Those were his two political mentors. And he, you know, Clinton is a great speech giver, and Mario was one, and they had different styles. And Andrew doesn't have that. And in this particular one, he screamed a lot. And I don't know if that was to be heard above the crowd. Supposedly a lot of people were talking. I was not actually in Philly, yeah, but watching it on TV, it was loud.
Yeah. Fascinating to watch this whole thing unfold, because we do know that the Republican Senate is endangered. Their control of the Senate is endangered in New York. And we do know, at least I know, I can argue with anybody, that despite what he says, one of the great reasons they have stayed in office is because of Andrew Cuomo. So now the, quote, progressive goes to the convention, gives a speech, and does anybody bother to ask him, how can a guy who is saying, I'm a progressive, also be held responsible for keeping the Republicans in office?
Well, I mean, he said he supports Democrats.
He said it.
And
nobody believes it.
And he said that what was interesting was his message throughout the week. He, unlike in 2012 in Charlotte, where I was at that convention, he was very scarce in 2012. He didn't want to be seen as trying to steal national limelight. He didn't want it to be, oh, he's trying to run for president in 2016. So he came down for one day. He gave a speech to the delegation, the New York delegation, but not before the convention itself. And then he left. Here, he was there for three of the 4 days. He gave a speech before the convention. He also gave a speech or two at the delegation breakfast. Interestingly enough, he came in the first morning with Bernie Sanders. And, you know, we know the governor's had his problems with the progressive left. He's had his problems with Sanders. He was actually one of Hillary's attack dogs in New York on Sanders for his gun control stance. But that morning he came in and he talked about the importance of unity within the Democratic Party and unity within the New York delegation. But interestingly enough, while he was preaching unity, he certainly wasn't having it with Mayor de Blasio, his chief political foe.
He just can't stop himself.
He can't stop himself. And a matter of fact, de Blasio was supposed to speak the last day at the delegation breakfast. And Cuomo went long, and all the event went long, and de Blasio had another event and got up and left. So the mayor of New York, the biggest city of in the state, never addressed the New York delegation during the 4 days in Philly. But again, he talked about unity, and certainly there's no unity with de Blasio, and there's certainly no unity with him and the Senate Democrats. He didn't give a full-throated endorsement of a Senate Democratic takeover like Chuck Schumer did, like Kirsten Gillibrand did. You know, he said, I understand they're frustrated and I support Democrats, but that's about as far as he went.
Well, if you take a look at this de Blasio-Cuomo fight, let's stay there for 1 minute. It would appear to most that Cuomo has actually won that fight. You know, in other words, Cuomo's numbers are way up. De Blasio's are way down. They're both being investigated by the U.S. attorney, or the people around them are. You really have to wonder whether or not he knew something we didn't know, which is he's going to take this guy on. He's going to beat him into the ground.
The thing that the governor can do that the mayor can't is he could pass things on a statewide level. So the governor got a real scare when Zephyr Teachout challenged him from the left in 2014 in the Democratic primary.
And beat the hell out of him in upstate New York.
And beat him in upstate New York. He got a real scare there. And since then, we've really seen the quote-unquote progressive Andrew Cuomo come through. And so now he's able to go around.
Wait. Are you implying that the reason he went from being a conservative Clintonian Democrat to a progressive Democrat is because he had the stuffing, if that's a good word, scared out of him when Teachout almost beat him?
I don't know if I'm implying it or I'm saying it outrightly, but certainly the timing would seem to say that. And she didn't almost beat him, to be fair. He won 60% of the vote, but...
Yeah, but New York and Long Island, but upstate, right, which he's been working so hard on, he loses.
But she had no money, and she was a nobody, and she got 35% or so of the vote against him. So certainly he took notice. He was at war with the teachers' unions. He was at war with the base of the Democratic Party, and that has changed. But one thing he's been able to do now is, while de Blasio talks about income inequality, the governor is running around saying, I passed things. I passed the $15 minimum wage. I passed, family health care.
And he even takes credit for something he doesn't deserve it for, fracking.
And fracking as well. But so he could say, I get stuff done, and which he has said, I get stuff done, and the mayor and others just talk. So I did a column recently saying how both of them are under investigation. Both of them have had a spate of terrible headlines in recent months. And yet Cuomo's numbers, particularly in New York City, are very strong. 60% still feel have a favorable view of him in New York City, according to this week's Quinnipiac poll. And for the mayor, he's underwater. More people view him unfavorably than view him favorably in New York City.
Being mayor of New York is a very tough job.
It's a tough job. And it just seems like there's a scandal a day popping up on the mayor. And he doesn't seem to handle it as well as the governor's handled it.
Somebody asked the governor whether he wanted to go back into the cabinet. And he had an answer.
He said, no, been there, done that, basically. He said, I spent 8 years in a Clinton cabinet. I'm not looking to do it again.
Right. What do you think that's all about?
I think he believes that. I think he, unless it was something really big, which he's not going to get.
No,
he
can't be Attorney General. He can't be Secretary of State. Right. So forget it, Jack.
So then forget it. He doesn't want it. Some people think he's still holding out hope for a potential. Well, this would be if Hillary Clinton lost, but that he would still like to run for president in 2020 if possible. If not, he'll run it for a third term in all likelihood, unless things really collapse.
Let's talk, Ken Lovett of the Daily News, of something that I need some help on understanding. There's this Brooklyn hospital sale going on. It was backed by de Blasio and Cuomo, and it is drawing federal scrutiny. Dark music, please. What's going on?
And it looks like the federal scrutiny is on the de Blasio side. Now, de Blasio, when he was public advocate,
that's the number two spot in New York City government.
Yeah, and also a real nothing job. You basically just, spout your opinion, but
well,
you have
it got
no power.
Put him into a position to be mayor.
It did. And so when he was public advocate, this, Long Island College Hospital in Brooklyn was losing a lot of money. SUNY was talking about closing it. SUNY ran it. And de Blasio, both as public advocate and a candidate for mayor, was dead set against closing a hospital on the site. He thought there should be a full-service hospital. He even got arrested at a protest for that during the campaign, very publicly. So when he became mayor, not so long after, he signed onto a deal with Cuomo and SUNY that basically said that the property can be sold and that there would be a healthcare facility there, but it wouldn't be a full service hospital, or it didn't have to be. And a lot of people felt he sold out. Well, apparently Preparara is looking at the people involved in it, because there were a couple of things that happened. One was there was a developer who wanted the site. He didn't get it. A guy named Don Peebles, who now says he may run for mayor. He says that the de Blasio team called him up around the time they were deciding what to do about this property and asked for donations. And then also, one of the lobbyists who's very close to de Blasio and was meeting with them at the time, his top aides, Jim Capelli, I think his name is, he was representing Fortis Development, which actually won the bid. So people were wondering why de Blasio shifted positions and then a lobbyist close to him, you know, representing a company that got the bid, got it. Now, de Blasio's people say, we had nothing to do with this. This was a SUNY sale. This was a state sale. But the subpoenas that we know about are only looking into the communications SUNY had with de Blasio, not necessarily with the governor's office.
Interesting. Interesting. Fascinating. Thank you for that. So then there is this question of the Buffalo Billions. We do know that Preparar has a full-scale investigation going on about whether or not there was quid pro quos, whether if you gave money you got contracts. Is your ear to the ground? Are you able to get anything on this?
Well, we know what they're looking at. We know in part who they're looking at. And obviously, there's people very close to the governor involved in this. Elaine Calieros, who heads SUNY Polytechnic, a lobbyist, Todd Howe, who dates back to his father and also worked for the current governor.
You were talking about Cuomo's, Cuomo's father.
Cuomo's father, yeah. and also worked for Andrew Cuomo when Cuomo was secretary at HUD. Todd Howe's one of them. We know on the periphery is Joe Prococo, who's being looked at, who was hired as a consultant by some of these companies involved in the Buffalo Billion and other projects while serving as the governor's campaign manager. And, you know, you don't get closer to the governor than Prococo and Todd Howe. So we don't know where it is yet. It's been kind of quiet on that front of late. People expect something will occur at some point, but I don't have a time for you.
Do you think there's any possibility at all that Preparar, the fighting U.S. attorney who I so much admire, is laying off results until this presidential election is over?
I don't know. It's not really in his M.O., although he is very political. But you would think, he likes press. He likes being seen as the guy cleaning up corruption in New York government, both Albany and city. State and city. So it would surprise me if that's the reason, but certainly, you know, he does have ambitions, whatever they may be. So who knows?
Let me ask you about Governor Cuomo and Pokemon. What's that about?
Well, Jeff Klein and Diane Savino, two senators, independent Democratic conference.
These are the traitors.
In the Senate. They held a press conference last Friday to talk about this Pokemon Go phenomenon, which is a game that people are, I guess, losing their minds over.
Do you understand it?
I do, only because I've been writing about it. It's not something I'm interested in. Right. Basically, you run around with your phone and you look at it, and if you have the app downloaded, you're trying to catch Pokemon characters that appear at different areas around this.
My kids were in the supermarket with me the other day. They're in their 40s, one PhD and one almost PhD, and they were going nuts saying, I got him, I got him. Nope, he escaped. I have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, so that's the Pokemon Go. So what Klein and Savino, they put out a report that they sent out staffers to about 100 or 200, I think it was 100, places where convicted sex offenders who were out of prison were living, registered sex offenders. And they found that 57% of the time, a Pokemon character showed up around their houses. So they were just warning, we haven't had evidence of this, but they were warning that this could make kids susceptible. You know, if a predator was playing this game, they can lure them to their houses with these Pokemon.
But who does the luring?
There's an app, but there's also a part of the game where you can lure people to, you know, lure them to come and find, you know, characters that you've placed. So they were warning this could be, and they said they're going to introduce a bill that would not allow these characters within 100 feet of where a sex offender lives. The governor got front page coverage in our paper and others, and the governor, sensing an opportunity, I guess, on Sunday said, we are going to make it a condition of parole that no sex offender, convicted sex offender, will be able to play this game.
Fascinating. Do we have any sense of what the political rewards or fallout from all of this is?
Well, I don't know if there's a political reward. I think, you know, it's a high-profile thing, and certainly trying to keep, you know, predators, sex offenders away from kids isn't exactly a risky endeavor, but certainly it gets the governor associated with trying to keep Pokemon Go safe.
Let me talk to you about Airbnb. Now, I want to make a little disclosure. We have a little cabin on our land, and we have used it for Airbnb. I never want anybody pointing fingers at me for not disclosing that. Nevertheless, in New York City, Airbnb is a very controversial issue, and the real estate industry has really checked in on it. So first, explain for the one or two people who don't know what Airbnb is, what it is, and then explain, if you would, how much clout the real estate industry in New York has.
Basically, it's an online service that if you are going to a city and you don't want to necessarily stay at a hotel, you could stay at someone's house. People use the site and you go on and you can basically rent someone's place for a certain amount of time. It's controversial in New York because a lot of people in apartment buildings feel that it brings in transients. You know, you've got all these people running around residential buildings that you don't know who they are. They're throwing parties. They're trashing the place. This is the arguments against.
No, I hear you, but I have a very, very close relative who has a co-op. They're not allowed to have anybody rent anything from
them. So a couple of years ago, the state passed a law that basically says that if you own a multifamily dwelling and you cannot rent it out for less than 30 days. So that was trying to crack down on this kind of stuff because they would consider it an illegal hotel. So what the legislature did this year, a first of the nation law that they passed that the governor has yet to sign or veto, but they passed a bill that would prohibit the advertising of these kinds of places on the sites like Airbnb sites. So it would really crack down on how many places would be available.
Well, who will this annoy? This will annoy anybody who wants to make a little extra money.
Exactly, and that's what Airbnb argues, that if it, you know, they argue that most people are doing it correctly, and they say that it gives them pocket money, not only pocket money, but it helps them afford rent and mortgage payments that are going up sky high in New York City. So you asked about the developers. This is the one issue where you've really seen the developers, you've seen the hotel trade unions, and you have seen the
hotel owners.
Owners, and you've seen the affordable housing advocates, who are usually on the opposite side of the developers. They're all together on this and opposing and supporting this bill that would crack down on the advertising. They all support it.
Which is really cracking down on Airbnb in essence. Yes.
So when you're talking about the real estate developers, they're extremely powerful, especially when it comes to the Senate Republicans and the governor. And then you have the hotel lobby, which is really influential with the Assembly Democrats who run the Assembly and also the governor. So you've got very powerful interests right now who are supporting this bill. Airbnb has been running ads in favor of a veto of the bill, saying that, you know, it would hurt middle-class New Yorkers trying to stay in their homes.
So what is your instinct? Your instinct is that the governor is going to want to please all of these groups, right, and sign the bill, except that he doesn't want to lose the Airbnb constituency.
Yeah, I don't know what he's going to do here. My guess is he may sign it, but I don't know. You know, they haven't tipped their hand on that yet.
Think they're doing polling?
No, probably. They look into all that stuff.
Right. Now, into the background of all of this, there are two sort of characters who were accused of having bribed policemen and done things like that. Who are they, and how does this fit into state politics?
Well, they're as you said, they're two people who've been around New York politics. They were bribing officers. They're big time donors to the mayor of New York. That's part of the investigation into de Blasio. They've been linked to a lot of different things. So I think how it plays, they've given a lot of money. You've seen people to state candidates who have now given it back and returned it.
But they did things like put police officials on planes with a prostitute on the plane, apparently.
They gave gifts to police officers. I think there's already been four who have resigned over this thing, maybe more. And, you know, there's indictments. People are pleading guilty. It's a big scandal down in New York City. It hasn't really touched the state yet, but certainly it's touched the mayor.
Ken Lovett, I wanted to ask you about Donald Trump and Plattsburgh situation. Now, Plattsburgh is up there towards the Canadian border. I love the town. We have a full-power radio station there. And, you know, the Plattsburgh paper is an excellent paper. I know because it carries my column. All of a sudden, we hear that, of all places, Donald Trump wants to go to Plattsburgh to give a talk. So what was
but
that?
But they pulled the plug on it.
I know.
So I don't know where that came from. I do know this. On Monday, I had a column this past Monday that top Trump aides after the convention were telling people in New York, Trump supporters in New York, that we're not going to really focus on New York. You know, we're going to focus on the key swing states that we need to win this election.
Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania.
Which is
Virginia.
Not a surprise, except that the Donald himself told them, no, I want to compete in New York. It's my home state, and I want you to show me a plan where we compete in New York, which is where the Plattsburgh thing all of a sudden popped up, but then they pulled it. It's interesting because they haven't committed any money to New York yet. And what they basically were seeing is that there are New York Trump officials who are saying it's up to us, and they're going to be meeting sometime this week. It's up to us to raise a couple of million dollars to, quote, light a fire to prove that we're in play. And if we can do that, I think he'll want to do it. But if they can't do that, which I don't think many people expect they'll be able to do, I don't expect to see New York in play. You know, you don't know what Trump is. Someone said you could take all the things, you know, all the plans that you would normally do and throw it out the window when it comes to him. And so far, it's been successful for him.
Right now, it's clear that Andrew Cuomo will be running yet for another term. At least it's clear to me. But I'm looking around at potential opponents. The Trumps are saying that they might want to run their Donald Trump Jr. for mayor of New York. But I'm not hearing anything about a really high-profile person running against Andrew.
On the Republican side, I think it's early. I mean, obviously, the names we hear on the Republican side are Rob Astorino, who ran against him 2 years ago. You're hearing Harry Wilson, a business turnaround expert who ran for comptroller against Tom DiNapoli in 2010 and lost.
These are what I call who-he's.
Well, right. And you don't know. Maybe depending on how Donald Trump does in November, depending on how Donald Trump does across New York in November, maybe a Trump kid decides to run for governor in 2018. I think it's a little too early yet to say that. I think you saw people really beating down the idea of Donald Trump Jr. or Eric Jr. or Eric Trump or even Ivanka Trump running for mayor, saying they expect the father to get crushed in New York City. And if he does, well, that doesn't bode well for a mayoral candidacy.
Well, we do see at least one. I just want to end with this. We do see at least one upstate, rather obscure congressman saying he's going to vote for a Republican, vote for Hillary Clinton, gets worldwide attention for having made this. What do you make of that?
Richard Hanna. He's been a moderate to liberal Republican. He's retiring. He's not running for reelection.
And, so big deal.
And he, but, it, you know, it is a Republican who came out and said, you know, I got to do what's right for the country. That, you know, I don't agree with every candidate, but I cannot support this guy. And I think a lot of Republicans feel that. You just have not seen any elected Republicans in Congress say that yet. And, you know, Hannah's the first one. Wouldn't surprise me if there's a few others. I don't think you'll see a ton, but it wouldn't surprise me if you'll see a few others.
Very quickly, Ken Lovett, we see the Senate, as you have indicated, up in play between the Democrats and Republicans in New York State. What are your antenna telling you right now?
If I had a bet, I think the Democrats will probably take it and have to cut a deal with the five independent Democrats
to
run a coalition. But you never know. You know, it's such a weird year as it is. And the Republicans have been in this situation before where we counted them out and they won. But I think in a presidential year, it certainly benefits the Democrats, who, don't forget, right now actually have a numerical majority. They just don't control the chamber because you have six Democrats aligned with the Republicans. So if they pick up one or two more seats, I think you'll see at least five of those Democrats not come back into the fold, so to speak, but cut a deal with them to run the chamber cooperatively.
Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News, you are our favorite. We love having you here. You've done incredible service for us to continue to come back and put up with us, and we appreciate it so much.
That's always fun. Thanks so much.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign. Online at nyscasa.org.